History admires the wise, but it elevates the brave. Edmund Morris. Prologue. The White Mercedes. Going to work was the same everywhere, and the changeover from Marxism-Leninism to chaos-capitalism hadn't changed matters much. Well, maybe things were now a little worse. Moscow, a city of wide streets, was harder to drive in now that nearly anyone could have a car. And the center lane down the wide boulevards was no longer tended by militiamen for the Politburo and used by Central Committee men who considered it a personal right of way, like Tsarist princes in their Troika sleds. Now it was a left turn lane for anyone with a Zeal or other private car. In the case of Sergei Nikolaevich Golovko, the car was a white Mercedes 600, the big one with the S-class body and 12 cylinders of German power under the hood. There weren't many of them in Moscow, and truly his was an extravagance that ought to have embarrassed him, but didn't. Maybe there were no other nomenclatura in this city, but rank did have its privileges, and he was chairman of the SVR. His apartment was also large, on the top floor of a high-rise building on Kutuzovsky Prospect, a structure relatively new and well-made, down to the German appliances which were a long-standing luxury accorded senior government officials. He didn't drive himself. He had Anatoly for that, a burly former Spetsnaz Special Operations soldier who carried a pistol under his coat and who drove the car with ferocious aggression, while tending it with loving care. The windows were coated with dark plastic, which denied the casual onlooker the sight of the people inside, and the windows were thick, made of polycarbonate and specced to stop anything up to a 12.7mm bullet, or so the company had told Golovko's purchasing agents 16 months before. The armor made it nearly a ton heavier than was the norm for an S-600 Benz, but the power and the ride didn't seem to suffer from that. It was the uneven streets that would ultimately destroy the car. Road paving was a skill that his country had not yet mastered, Golovko thought as he turned the page in his morning paper. It was the American International Herald Tribune, always a good source of news, since it was a joint venture of the Washington Post and the New York Times, which were together two of the most skilled intelligence services in the world, if a little too arrogant to be the true professionals Sergei Nikolaevich and his people were. He'd joined the intelligence business when the agency had been known as the KGB, the Committee for State Security. Still, he thought, the best such government department the world had ever known, even if it had ultimately failed. Golovko sighed. Had the USSR not fallen in the early 1990s, then his place as chairman would have put him as a full voting member of the Politburo, a man of genuine power in one of the world's two superpowers, a man whose mere gaze could make strong men tremble. But no, what was the use of that? He asked himself. It was all an illusion. An odd thing for a man of supposed regard for objective truth to value. That had always been the cruel dichotomy. KGB had always been on the lookout for hard facts, but then reported those facts to people besotted with a dream, who then bent the truth in the service of that dream. When the truth had finally broken through, the dream had suddenly evaporated like a cloud of steam in a high wind, and reality had poured in like the flood following the breakup of an ice-bound river in springtime. And then the Politburo, those brilliant men who'd wagered their lives on the dream, had found that their theories had been only the thinnest of reeds, and reality was the swinging scythe. And the eminence bearing that tool didn't deal in salvation. But it was not so for Golovko. A dealer in facts, he'd been able to continue his profession.